I want this one moment. It's what I want in a relationship, which might explain why I'm single now. Ha ha. It's kind of hard to... It's that thing when you're with someone and you love them and they know it and they love you and you know it, but it's a party and you're both talking to other people and you're laughing and shining and you look across the room and catch each other's eyes, but not because you're possessive or it's precisely sexual, but because that is your person in this life. And it's funny and sad, but only because this life will end, and it's the secret world that exists right there in public, unnoticed, that no one else knows about. It's sort of like how they say that other dimensions exist all around us, but we don't have the ability to perceive them. That's what I want out of a relationship. Or just life, I guess. Love. Blah. I sound stoned.
Almost heaven. West Virginia. Blue Ridge Mountain. Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze, country roads.
So hi and welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is a very tired David.
And this is
also very tired.
You still haven't seen Blue Jasmine?
Nope.
I haven't seen Blue Jasmine.
Because that's a retro film.
Has documentary come
out? I haven't played a second of Gran Turismo 6, but I have seen the Gran Turismo documentary twice.
I did beat Bioshock Infinite. I quite like that game.
Can I say I beat XCOM?
No. I don't think you're allowed to beat that game. But when it comes to the end and says you won, it's just like no time to start a new path.
What are you talking about? There's extra options and impossible difficulties to beat. What are you guys joking? Come on.
So, anyways, this week Douglas has asked us to talk about the film.
I have notes.
The best offer.
You have notes.
I have notes.
I don't this know, that doesn't sound good.
This generally isn't good when David has
notes. No, dear, it's not as bad.
Truly surprising, wouldn't you say?
It's a fake. The love of art and knowing how to hold a brush doesn't make a man an artist. You need an inner mystery.
Please believe me, I have no wish to waste your time, but I would like to have a...
valuation.
Exactly.
Miss Ibbotson is extremely fond of this house. Maybe too fond.
Are you here?
The Best Offer, which is the latest film by an Italian director whose name I should know, but I don't, and I'm not staring at my laptop to go and look it up, who is the director of Cinema Paradiso.
Kurostami.
How dare you slander
the Italian name.
Kurostami's name?
No, trust me. It's not Kurostami. He's slandering.
Anyways, yes, and this is a film with Jeffrey Rush and Jim Sturgess.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And all sorts of other people.
When I saw his name, I went, oh, I know why I'm watching this now. Jim Sturgess.
Douglas, you selected this film
yes,
for us to
I
discuss.
Did.
Tell us what it's about.
Okay, so this movie is... at its heart, I guess, it's really a love story. A very... quirky or weird one, because you know it's about two people who don't quite you wouldn't think fit together but do, and somehow are put in the same sort of area together. So you have Jeffrey Rush, who is
Barbossa.
Yes, in a previous life, he was a pirate.
This going to go very, very poorly.
If we want to go there, he was also a television producer who got divorced by his wife.
Mm-hmm. He's just Barbossa.
Just Barbossa? Mm-hmm. Okay, he's just Barbossa.
Yeah.
He will forever be Barbossa.
You're all idiots.
Anyway, apparently he's a legendary auctioneer of, you know, antiques and art and all of that good stuff. This woman tries to get him to essentially advise her and for her to be his client so that she can sell off some of her stuff. And she is, so these are both socially awkward is not the right word, just completely antisocial people. Right, Jeffrey Rush, he is a huge germaphobe. He doesn't like to touch anything. He doesn't really like human contact at all. And he has built so many layers, I guess, in becoming, in getting to the status that he is. He's built so many layers between him and even things like his clients. So much so that he really doesn't ever interact with them very often. Right? And somehow this woman actually gets straight through to her because of, again, some weird quirk that he has. Because it's his birthday, he says, okay, I must answer the first call that comes into the office today, or something like that. And that just happened to be her. And somehow she implores him to take her on as a client. And she is very mysterious. You don't see her for a lot of the movie. She's very much a recluse, and she's kind of, what's the word, orchestrating this whole process from afar. And somehow over the course of the movie they build this relationship, and all of those proverbial walls are torn down. And then there is a big event at the end that kind of, reshapes the way that you see the movie, or you watch the movie at first. Now, the thing about this movie is I don't think that there's anything special about it in terms of what it does, what it presents. I think, funnily enough, I compared it in my head when I watched it, and Andrew wasn't very happy when I did this, but I compared it to like a Soderbergh film. This actually feels very Soderberghy.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Doesn't it, Andrew?
And as much as we all make fun of Soderbergh here, just really because of Andrew's intense
love for
Soderbergh. Soderbergh is really good, right? Yeah,
like, there are times when I want to say good things about Soderbergh, and I just brush them aside, because so easy.
But the thing about it is, though, that there are times, and there have been many times, at least recently, where Soderbergh has just been really bad. Or maybe even the better word would be mediocre. And
Andrew is going to stab you in the neck.
And what this movie feels like.
What is your motto, sir?
What this movie feels like. Oh my goodness. What this movie feels like is a good version of
bad Soderbergh.
Bad Soderbergh. Right?
This is the biggest diss ever. What a terrible compliment.
I actually love this movie, and I know that I'm going to just put that out there, and I'm also going to say that I'm not going to defend this. My love for this movie is equivalent, it's akin to Andrew's love for anything Soderbergh made in the last 10 years.
I don't think it's a
great. I think that this movie is beautiful. I think that it's at least, well, there's really one main actor, and that's Jeffrey Rush. And I think
his name is Barbossa.
His name is Barbossa.
Captain
and
he
Barbossa'd the shit out of this movie. I think he was great.
Listen, we can only use people. We can only use one person's surname.
Okay.
Right, as a verb and, for and movies. And it is Channing Tatum. Alright? We cannot continue.
And he was in the better movie.
Right? Right? Okay. You can Channing the hell out of something. I'm not going to
Alright, fair enough. But he was awesome in this movie. And I think that those two things really, for me, I know that those are two very integral things when it comes to my liking of a movie, and they definitely played on me in this film. And you know, I don't want to talk too much about that end part, even though it's really crucial to the film, but it's
because this is a very recent film.
Yes, yeah, a very recent
this
film.
This is the first movie of this year you're seeing, right? This is released this year.
No, it's released last year.
Official theatrical release was the 1st of January.
No. This was...
Maybe in the States, I guess. Yeah. But this has been out for a while.
No, I'm pretty sure. Well, because I wanted to watch this for my top 10 list for 2013. This was a 2013 according to somewhere that
sure.
I saw.
No, I'm,
yeah,
I'm sure
know.
You could
it was
argue
probably released
oh,
in
but the USA is getting...
Oh, oh no, you know what it is? I saw it on Wikipedia.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was in the film of 2013, and they use American release dates, don't they?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Wikipedia.
And it's out on VOD now.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, as I said, I really love this movie. I'm not going to defend it too hard because I can see there are flaws,
mm-hmm.
right? And there are holes, and there are lots of, you know, things that you can get upset about with this movie. But for me, as I said, this is one of those, I guess, genre films where I was all in, and it spoke to me personally, you know? And I hope maybe, I don't know if we want to do a section, because it is so important, after we do like an initial discussion, to actually talk about the film as a whole.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if we want to do that, but I think other than that, I'm kind of tapped out.
Yep.
So the thing with me and this movie, and I guess most of my complaints will kind of come into that ending.
Because
mm-hmm. it's not really the ending is a problem,
mm-hmm.
but it kind of is like, for full explanation, you kind of want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But it felt mundane, is what it does. It felt like a normal movie. Like, I could see all the things, everything about it was heightened when it came to like the performances or the visual look of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the story that was there in front of me was so plain that it just kind of felt eh to me for most of it. Like, I mean, you were even making jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I shouldn't call it a joke. You were doing what you usually do when we sit down and watch movies together,
mm-hmm.
which is you funnily try and guess what the movie is going to do. Right? And you were like, oh, she's an automaton.
Yeah, I did think that for a little while.
I'm on board.
And the thing
about I'm like, if this movie thinks for even 1 second that they're going to, and then it was like, okay.
And here lies the thing: the best versions of these movies, and I'm not even going to even try and tell you guys that Trance or Side Effects are the best version of this movie. But whatever the best version of this movie is, right out there. It gets you in a certain way, and maybe it got you, Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
It gets you in a certain way where those hints that you see about the twists of the story that are coming,
mm-hmm.
you only see those when you watch it for the second or the third time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, agreed.
I was seeing those things immediately within this movie,
mm-hmm.
where it was just like for example, even the cafe across the street, where they were embedding some things in there where you knew it was coming, right? And at that point, I appreciated the movie for the actual, as I said, the craft that they put into it, because it was amazing,
mm-hmm.
right? Some of those shots are
yeah.
just downright gorgeous, and
yeah.
given that this guy did Cinema Paradiso, it makes sense.
Okay.
But...
You know what's funny?
Mm-hmm.
Not to really quote you, but for me, Cinema Paradiso, at least from what I recall, right? It's been a while, and I only watched it the one time, even though I bought the Blu-ray and then realized that it wasn't the one that I wanted. But Cinema Paradiso, to me, wasn't really that pretty. It was all about the story, and, you know, it just pulled the right string again. Like, by the end of that movie, Andrew, I was... Oh. but yeah, I think for me this is now another side to the director where I'm like, this is
like amazing. What it felt to me watching this movie was someone gave this guy the most average of scripts written,
mm-hmm.
and he just made it as the best way he could.
Yeah.
And I'm
okay.
happy he did. But
okay.
Like, at the end of the day, when we reach the end of March, I expect to forget this movie existed. not even the end of summer.
Mm-hmm.
End of March.
Wow. Wow. Well, okay.
Oh, alright. It's my turn. I don't dislike the movie.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the process of watching the movie, I was on board the entire time. Mostly through the acting and directing. Andrew's right. To some extent, the story
mm-hmm.
is kind
of
straightforward.
Yeah,
these two crazy people find some way to meet and movie magic.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a movie. Fine. My issue with the movie is that it has two acts. There's no third act. There's a thing that happens at the end. And then the movie just careens towards the end.
Yeah.
And you go, all right. Movie, fine.
Yeah.
You took 2 hours, though. And you're missing an act. Because... I know you think you've Chris Nolan this. But you have not. the end needs some explanation. And because the movie ended how it ended...
Mm-hmm.
It gave my brain the thing that the movie... doesn't want me to do, which is pay attention to the details.
Oh, no.
And the second the movie ended and I started reflecting on what happened in the movie, then there is just a giant series of red flags just all over the place, like none of this. But thinking about the movie, I went, no, but I still enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the process of getting here. It's just they've ended it in a way that I now have to piece together things. But this movie cannot, it doesn't hold up when you ask me to fit things together, because it just doesn't. The script or whatever it is about the movie just isn't there. And so I find myself in two places. And we start talking about spoilers. There are some things that I've written down here that... like the thing that I take away from the movie, I can't speak about. I mean, I guess I could. No, I can't. I'm reading about the thing. Okay, there's a thing about this movie. There's essentially two ways to view the movie. There is a romanticized way,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the way that Douglas has taken.
Maybe.
Yeah. And there is the more cynical way, which I think is the way that Andrew's taken. And it is the only way that was left to me once the movie was over and I started thinking about the movie. But I still like the movie. Like, there is still a lot of things about the movie that I enjoy. It doesn't hurt that the lead actor is incredible. But Captain Barbossa is... I mean, he's incredible in most things. Even shitty Pirates of the Caribbean. If you just isolate his bits, you know, he's acting the shit out of
it. And for a long time, he is isolated in this
yeah.
movie. You
it's
know, he him. Is... This is his vehicle. Like... Anyway, yeah, this is his vehicle. Yeah.
And so that I enjoy. And I know I enjoyed the movie because it was only when the movie ended that I realized that it was 2 hours long. So it didn't feel like 2 hours at any point. It didn't feel like it dragged. It didn't... Like, I was just on board for this story. And it was taking me all over the place. And in the very beginning, they kind of set it up that the girl may have been an automaton. And that kind of threw me. I thought the same. I'm like, if this movie thinks for even a half second that this is okay,
yeah.
I'm going to tear this movie to shreds. Because there'll be no way for them to explain this.
It got to the point where, you remember there's the first scene that you actually see her?
Right.
I was looking real close.
Yes. I'm like, let me be very clear. Don't do it. And they didn't. Alright, fine. But then they did something at the end that, in my opinion, is equally as dumb.
Yeah.
But
I can explain to you the version of this movie that I wanted to be real. That I wanted the movie to be. I don't think this really goes into much spoilers, but the version of this movie that I, like, when I was watching it, that I would have been most happy with. When you're watching this movie and you realize what Barbossa is doing, which is that he's collecting all of these pieces of art, whether it be for his pension or whatever, I don't believe that's really it. He sees it as an eventual to that, but right now he's enjoying it as art.
I don't. Right? He collected them because, like, he even said it towards the end that, like, he isn't comfortable around women. He doesn't like staring them in the face, and these paintings.
Right, and that's what I realized. If, like, so, like, even I don't think I even heard that line.
He
right?
spoke but, about them in terms of money to other people, but it was clear to everybody. He was never going to sell any of those.
Right, and that's what I noticed when, like, you were in that room with him and he would just contemplate whatever while looking around, that they were all portraits of women, right? And
also super creepy.
Let's skip past that part. Okay. Let's skip past that part of the conversation. Let's not deal with creepy.
I mean, like, really super creepy. Like, guys, unnerving.
And then it becomes about this guy who meets this woman who... he doesn't have to stare in the face of, right? He doesn't have to feel awkward around because there's this thing about her which is so weird that kind of cancels it out. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this weird romance where he realizes slowly but surely he can move away from this art that he has and his connection to it to be about her. But the movie wasn't that. It was that for a bit, but it really wasn't. Yeah. And the thing about it is that while I saw that movie existing... and it would have turned out very interesting, I saw that that wasn't what the movie was, and it was clear from the get-go.
Yeah.
Something was up.
Yeah. No. Okay, you're looking at me. Are we talking about spoilers now?
Do you want to? You want?
Yes. Well, no, just because I would like to speak more on the movie, but I'm not sure how much more I can say.
So, all right, guys. Without we're going to be discussing spoilers for this film. If you care at all about this movie, if you want to see it, go and check it out. It's available on VOD now. If not, you can just head on to the next set of the podcast. Douglas, what is it
you want to come in? I knew exactly what this movie was from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
If only for the reason, very much similarly to when I knew exactly what was going to happen in the first Shyamalan movie, Sixth Sense, because some asshole told me about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
This time, that some asshole was IMDb, because IMDb has up front and center that this is a crime movie.
Yep.
So,
you know, something's...
I know something's going on. And about 2 minutes in, I'm like, there's only one way this movie can end. Right? There's only one thing that this movie is doing. It's a heist movie, which it was. Right?
The Ocean's 11.
Exactly. So, what I really enjoyed, right? If you... Let's forget the heist portion of it. Right? Let's talk about the same sort of thing that Andrew was talking about, where it's really just the relationship and his... ability to create that relationship. I really enjoyed the way that they did that in that, let's forget that this woman is actually being disingenuous, which she is, but as the movie went on, you saw each of them kind of shedding layers of their bubbles that they created around themselves.
Bubbles don't have layers.
Okay, of their onions.
All right. That other layer is a really horrible layer. Which is the truth.
You could have said armor.
No, onions. Onions.
I don't think you know what metaphors work.
So, you know, slowly but
honest,
surely.
I don't think most Jamaicans know.
Oh my goodness, slowly but surely you saw little idiosyncrasies which you got used to from both of them kind of give way, you know?
Bubble sheddings,
yes, or onion peeling.
Right.
So, you know, for instance, Jeff, Jeff, jeez.
Barbosa.
Jeffrey Rush.
Jeffrey Barbosa.
So Jeffrey Rush, from day one, he can't touch anything. He has gloves on all the time. Even when he has on the glove, if he does not like mobile phones, and if he talks on a mobile phone, he cannot put it to his face without having a handkerchief in between his head and the phone. And
the
I don't know when it first happened, but I noticed, I think it may have been a quarter, maybe a halfway into the movie, he no longer did that.
Well,
right,
well
he bought his Sony phone.
Well, here lies the thing. Yeah. He bought his own phone.
Right.
And I was willing to argue that away to him.
Well, no,
saying,
he
just
didn't...
like with his handkerchief or anything that he would have put to his face, he had some form of control of
no,
it.
Well, he didn't buy his own phone. I think that was one of...
Yeah.
So, in the beginning of the movie,
yeah,
he was
no, he
given a
phone yeah.
And that was the phone that he used.
His
right?
Sony phone.
Or whatever.
but either way, I mean, you know, a guy like him, if he puts something in his pocket, he's going to want to take it out and put a handkerchief, because even
right.
though it's his pocket, in the pocket is not exactly clean,
right?
Right? And, or at least that's how I envision him
yeah,
to be.
You
right?
can see, because he's, despite having on gloves, he's taking off things with napkins.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the first time
yeah.
he tried to open the gate.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
And he has on gloves, and he's like, nope.
My gloves can't get dirty.
Yeah,
napkins
yeah.
on. Right.
You know, and the same thing with her. If even if you, as I say, forget that she's being disingenuous, and let's forget, of course, what we haven't said, by the way, so far, is that this woman is agoraphobic and lives in a house that her parents owned, but really only lives in a room within that house, and that room is essentially locked off to the rest of the public. So if anybody even comes into the house, she runs straight for the room and stays in there, because she doesn't want to see anybody, she doesn't want to be around anybody, she wants to be by herself for whatever reason. And we eventually find like half of our
is
reason
that
for that
Fincher movie?
Yeah,
that name of David
Panic
Fincher.
Room.
Panic Room.
Is
there a Panic Room?
Exactly. But let's forget the first big sort of thing that she does, which is to actually come out of the room and talk to him, because I think that was what I liked about a lot of the changes in each of them, was that they were subtle and they were slow, right? That clearly was not, that was done with a lot of fanfare, and it just kind of abruptly was like, all right, fine, I'm outside, you know? Exactly, you know? But, you know, things like him bringing the outside world to her, giving her dresses, having makeup on her face, her touching, they touched each other, you know, things like that, just, you know, slowly but surely you see this connection being made, and you see these two people confused about being happy about being with somebody else. And that was marvelously done, right? I really love that about this movie, right? And that's a big reason why I like this movie, right, Andrew? Even though I knew what was coming, even though I was like, this fucking woman is like the devil, I was still able to live in that moment and appreciate it for what it could have been. You know, as Damien says, romanticized it, right? And then now, this one, along with, you know, Jim Sturgis, steals this man's room of priceless art.
Jim Sturgis and I keep forgetting
Donald
his name.
Sutherland.
Donald
Sutherland.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is Hunger Games president.
He is a lot of stuff. and, you know, you're quite right. There are two acts, and then the third act just meanders for about 10 minutes and
Colossus.
It's done. Right? But there are things in that act that I appreciate, and I would say that I like that act kind of for the same reason that I like the last 5 minutes of Captain Phillips. Now, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, we don't talk very often about new movies. I do not like Captain Phillips.
No, you do not.
Right? I don't like it at all. I mean, it's an alright movie, but it's just kind of long and whatever as far as I'm concerned. Right? But those last 5 minutes are the best 5 minutes ever. The best 5 minutes definitely ever done by Tom Hanks. The way he just kind of goes through that period of shock and he can't speak, he can't move, he's shaking, and the way the camera kind of takes all of that in with the same sort of panicked feel to it. That's kind of what the end of this movie is, or a part of the end of this movie is. And I loved watching that, right? So Jeffrey Rush has finally, and what I love about it too is you feel the sort of emotional crash with him, right? Because you're so sucked into this relationship that he has, and you actually are able to believe, right, that this is something that could never happen, and against all odds, against all impossibilities, it actually did. He has ended his life, you know, as he knows it. And as much as this movie is all about like slow subtleties as well as big fanfare, so just like I said with the girl immediately running out of the room, his big fanfare in the end was when he said, listen guys, this is my last auction, I'm not doing this ever again, right? And for him to give that up, that one thing that was essentially the structure to his life, without that he would have been a crazy person, right? For him to give that up shows how much, maybe not that he's changed, but
the point where he, this was his life,
yeah,
these paintings, to where he got to a point where he's like, oh, I don't need this anymore.
Exactly.
I don't need this as a crutch anymore. I can move forward.
Right. You know, and moving forward involves this lady.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes home and it's just over. You know, a hammer hits him in the back of his head, metaphorically, and he just can't recover, right? He immediately goes insane. He actually is hospitalized, and, you know, you see old, I don't even want to call them friends, because he didn't know what a friend was. He couldn't make friends. Acquaintances come, you know, and visit him and say, you know, how you doing? And I really, actually, you know, fuck that. This last part is fucking spectacular, right? Because you can take it all sorts of ways, right? Because he definitely goes crazy, and you see him, you know, getting all sorts of like treatments. You know, he's in that twirly device that you see sometimes in the movies, and the thing about this end, right, is that this end can be taken from a lot of different views. You could actually believe that he's gotten better. He went to Belgium. I think it was Belgium. Where she told Prague. A story. Oh, Prague. Yes, Prague. She told a story about Prague and a square and a clock tower that he latched onto. Because that was essentially the story behind why she was the way she was supposed to have been. Why she was such a recluse. And so, at the end of the movie, you see him go to Prague and essentially sit down at a table, and you know what is happening here is that he's going to spend the rest of his life sitting down in this clock tower restaurant waiting on the woman to show up, right? Now, you can take that as a given and just say this is exactly what happened. You can also, and that alone is kind of wonderful, right? The one thing that I wasn't a big fan of from that end scene was, well, not the end scene, but those last, say, 10 minutes, was that there were some points where it was implied, it was kind of suggested that he may have been on a revenge sort of journey, which I didn't like. But another way to look at it, which I kind of want to look at it now this way, is that he actually never got seen again. This is now him. He's still crazy, and
it is the reality he's created.
Exactly, it's the reality he's created, and but it still kind of ends the same way because he's still waiting on her because he loves her so much. But he, you know, it will never happen because he really isn't there. You know, he's probably in some room somewhere, just like Brazil. Oops, sorry guys. I think I just
this 90-year-old movie.
I just spoiled Brazil.
Son of a bitch! I've never seen it.
Oh no! But
depends on the cut you see.
Haha, exactly. That is very true. And
that's
not
the least.
So the cut I love is the one that I just spoiled.
I guess for a moment I was hoping there was going to be a world of people who would come to us and say, fuck you, you didn't really spoil Brazil, you tricked me. Mm-hmm. And they ended up just all watching the other version.
That'd be awesome.
And then you get to go, no, you should see this longer one.
Exactly. But And this is clearly one of those movies, the more I talk about it, the more I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I actually came into this, what I was saying, this whole spiel, right? Kind of saying, yeah, the end was a little bit, it wasn't weak, but it definitely wasn't strong. I actually, now I'm thinking about it, I think it was a really strong ending. I love the sort of ambiguity of it all, and but that's a thing with me, you know. I like that. I like being able to, for 10 different people to interpret something 10 different ways, and for each of them to be right and for each of them to be wrong, you know, and nobody able to say yes, no, or maybe. And this movie was just crafted so well, you know. I love, not only you spoke about the craft of the visuals, and definitely, but even the crafting of the, I don't want to call it a story, but certain details within the story, this movie fits together perfectly, you know. It's like a big puzzle where it fits, and it's, you know, it's nice, at least for the first hour, until he becomes crazy. And I know some people don't like that, right? But and sometimes I don't like that about certain movies, but this one just touched me the wrong way. I know I went in with a bias, because we, I think, all are big fans of Cinema Paradiso. But this, as far as I'm concerned, you know, walked on its own 2 feet, and it was pretty amazing. I love this movie.
Young man.
Oh.
I'm fine with most of that, because the thing about it is, it's really just how you interpret the things that are in front of you. In front of you. And, yeah. And this movie, it's kind of weird with that ending, because you are right. And I kind of take it a little bit differently with how he evolved, as you put it.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't think that he changed his style, his lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Wherein that, for the whole first part of the movie, we understand him to be a borderline crazy person who, due to his obsession of art, right, to do with women and the whole, his work life, as he shifts to this woman, I don't see it as him healing or becoming more normal or becoming able to function in society as a just with everything, as opposed to, I see it as him moving from one crutch to the other.
Which is why
when she does what she does,
it's like that one crutch just got pulled out of him and he's now on a free fall. I can see that interpretation.
And even when he shows up in that end scene at the clock, it's him looking back for his crutch, and that can be a good thing, but I guess it's really just the whole crime bit which just set me off, because, as I said, it was so transparent throughout the movie.
Yeah, it was.
Like even that, the automaton, I'm going to call it that, the automaton in the cafe, right? You knew that was it, right? You knew that was what they were talking about when they talked about the story of this fantastic automaton which knew the answer to everything, and people hypothesized there was a dwarf inside, but they still couldn't understand how it knew everything.
Uh-huh.
There was this thing which was constantly off screen, or you saw it looking away from you, but you would hear its voice going 53, 54, and someone shouting, "You're wrong." Wait, no, you're right. or even that end scene where it explains it to you, where it's like 271 times she went out of the house.
Yeah.
Stuff. You're like, oh, so that is what they were talking about. Even the fact that it was Neil Clair. It was so transparent throughout the film that this is what they were playing on. That while I appreciated that version of the film that I have in my head, which I wish one day could be cut up and that is the movie, it's just kind of was dull, is all. It felt like a dull blade or something.
And the thing is, I understand your view of the movie 100%, because that's exactly, this is why I compare it to Soderbergh. That's exactly what I came off with when I watched Side Effects.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is the dullest movie ever. This is just, you know, paint by numbers, whatever. But as you know, it's all about just how certain things get to you. And I know that you, and there are a lot of people who think that this is that movie Side Effects is the best movie of 2013.
No, you don't know a lot of people.
Oh, I've seen it on Twitter.
No, you don't.
I have.
Those aren't people. Accounts at Andrew Ron. That's free time.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've heard. I don't know if you've heard. It's got a lot of
remember that short period of time where I accused you of being soccer jersey and you were just fucking with us?
Jesus.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm still waiting for that evidence to show.
Yep. And it surely will. Guys, I'm soccer jersey. All these years.
Do you have anything else to say, Damien?
I actually have a lot.
Yeah. You had a list.
No, it's not really a list. It's just things that I wrote down after the movie was done that I was thinking about. Now, there is, in my view, there's two ways to think about this movie. The more romanticized version, which is the way you talk about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more practical version, which is the way you think about the movie. And I wrote down, you know, she took his paintings, but she gave him something more.
Mm-hmm.
She gave him, you know, it was essentially a straight swap from an inanimate thing, the paintings, to real love. You never felt that before. And it is the thing that he now looks for love, and the end shot proves it. If you take everything for as face value, you know, he goes to the place, the whole thing with the cogs, they'll find their way together, and she told him the story, and it's going to be this warm,
and then he'll find her,
wonderful,
and
love,
be like,
story.
Fuck you!
Right.
And he'll be like, no, stay.
Right. And so, if we apply movie logic, you get this wonderful story. And while watching the movie, that is what I got. I didn't know about the heist, I didn't know about anything. The problem is, there are rules with all heist movies. The one rule is you must explain the heist.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be explained. It wasn't explained in this movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
The paintings were there, then they were gone, and then there was an automaton in the thing, right? No one explained how any of the pieces fit together. You know that Sutherland painted the picture. We have no idea how they got inside the house. We have
no
idea.
Yeah, you do. They rented it from
Claire. No, they don't know how in his house.
Because she was living there, so
yes.
She let him in.
But no one is going to allow her to take out all the pictures.
Hold on. I think what Douglas is kind of getting at his questions and kind of weirdly isn't the how.
Mm-hmm.
How is irrelevant, right? You started off with a good point, which is they never explained why.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
No, I think
the mechanics of the heist is completely irrelevant.
No. The point I'm getting at is, with heist movies, they show you all heist movies. You never watch a heist movie where they don't explain how the heist is done.
Mm-hmm.
All the Ocean's movies, they do it. In fact, every heist movie you can think of.
No, and I agree with you, but you're comparing apples and oranges.
Hold on. And so because that isn't there, because they don't explain, you know, the how it was done, and but they don't explain the how. They didn't explain the why either. Right? So that is the point you are getting
mm-hmm.
at. They don't explain the why. Which means at the end of the movie, if you're me, you have to ask, how did all of this shit get done? And the second you do that, then you have to introduce logic in the movie that isn't movie logic. And it is just a wash with red flag. Like, from the get-go, this guy is the head of a major auction thing. There's no way he goes into this auction thing and, like, they live in modern times. They have the internet. He jump on the internet and do this. And would have come up that the daughter is the girl in the... Like, the movie would have ended there. it hinges so much on these things that have to happen perfectly, but only happen in movies. Like, there's no real world way to use logic and explain any of these things. And that is where, when once the movie was over, I'm like, alright, they took the stuff. How did they get it out of the house? How did they get the automaton back into the house? Wouldn't the people who work at the house have seen these truckloads of people? The internet is there. Like, he wouldn't have gone and done these things and not looked into the background, because people steal shit all the time. It's the first thing you do as an auctioneer. Make sure that the background checks out. And none of, like, so many of these things just simply weren't done. And you go, getting this. And so I keep, there's more and more questions that I ask, and I go, yeah, this is, like, they should, the third act that I wanted is them to, what is on screen is fine, I don't have any problem. What I need though is explanations. Just movie logic out the rest of it for me. I need the how and the why, and then everything else, because the end scene is not what I have an issue with. Is once the movie is done, I'm left with, I don't want, there's no way they could have gotten this done. And now that I have to sit here and work out how they would have stolen all this shit and gotten all these things into place and hired this girl, and where would they have gotten the furniture from, and like all these things. Once I do that, then I start asking even more questions. And then a lot of the movie, a lot of them, like the scene where the guys jump him and beat him and she runs, you go, even if you're working towards, you know, she moving in with him, he's an old man and they beat him like a lot. Right? There's no real science about beating a man. Right? And they beat him a lot. Like, he should be dead. He's an old man, he should be dead. But that is only things that I think of once the movie was over. But when I think about the movie itself, I go, no, but I still like the movie. I just wish they'd have, the movie's already 2 hours. Give me 15, 20 more minutes.
With the Bond music.
Right. Right. This is the only heist movie I've ever seen.
Actually,
where
impossible.
No. Douglas, how did they pull off the heist? Like, we think we know.
You see that? Well, that's the thing. You're right. You don't know for a fact. I mean, I would say that, you know, Jeffrey Rush always says, you know, I always just send everybody home after dinner because I don't really want to be around them, kind of thing. So, you know, they're not there at some point because she probably sent them home. And then, you know, you have the house to yourself. You don't need to worry about cameras. You don't need to worry about people. You get a big bus, a big truck.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in an automaton because you're an asshole.
Right.
And you want to make fun of him. And she saw how he opened the thing. And just, you know, literally a couple of people to take down the pictures and to put in the automaton and do all of that. And that's just as straightforward as you can see. But I, honestly, I don't need it. Because, as you said, I took the romantic view.
I was on board. I just need someone to fill in the extra, just movie logic. And I don't need real world logic. Because it wasn't present at any point in this movie. Like him answering the call, he's a jerk. Why would he keep talking to this woman? Like, there's many times you should have just gone,
just hung up.
All right,
yeah.
Bitch. That's a wrap.
Yep.
And just moved on. What was the thing that kept driving him on? Movie logic. That is what drove him on. All right, fine.
Coincidence.
I know movie logic. I've seen enough of this. Right? And so when it's not really a twist, but when it comes, you go, all right. And you watch him go through this and you go, alright, yeah. And then the movie ends and I was waiting on the heist. Because it's a heist film, but not really. And it's this grand love story, but with a heist film attached. And honestly, it would have just been better if they just had her die. Like, instead of doing this heist thing,
right?
Just they were
actually that could
right.
work in this movie.
Just have
yeah.
just have them being happy. She gets something.
Yeah.
Like
and
he comes
goes,
home, she's just dead
yeah.
for, and no
and
one
he,
knows.
He goes crazy
right.
and he goes into his room and he like
mm-hmm.
rips up all the paintings
right.
and he still gets into that. That's that.
Right.
Yeah.
Have
yeah,
Sutherland
yeah.
kill her. Draw like a picture. See you in hell, bitch.
This is my artwork.
Yeah, this is my artwork. I just have her face.
Well, no, it would actually be for me. It would be better if she died. You don't even need to know how she died or who killed her. Or if she got killed
yeah.
versus maybe a heart attack or dropped downstairs or whatever.
Yeah.
And he literally can't take it. And so much so, as Andrew said, he took the crutch. He no longer needs the pictures in the
mm-hmm.
room, but he goes into the room to try and be like, okay,
mm-hmm.
this is what I need now. And he can't get what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so he rips him up and goes crazy. That would actually
yeah.
be a really good movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then that focuses on...
And then the last 5 minutes remain the same exact thing. And he goes into the restaurant
right.
and waits for her even though she's dead. And yeah,
right.
yeah.
I just have her disappear. Even,
I mean,
Damian, right.
you just made a really good movie.
Even if she's not dead, if she just disappears.
Yeah.
Then the whole... And then him sitting in the restaurant makes even more sense. He's hoping against hope that
yeah.
she turns up one day.
Yeah.
But it's heisting.
The heist is a big problem. It doesn't make any sense.
And they don't explain. Like, it doesn't make any sense on the face. And then they don't explain any of it. So it's just left up to me and my cynical mind. And you just had a field day, like, the phone thing. don't make any sense. Like, from the beginning.
You know,
with
if
the
you're looking for things to not make
right.
sense in this movie,
right.
there
exactly.
are plenty.
And that is the problem. But I don't want to do that with this movie. Because I enjoyed most of the movie. Just have Jim Sturgis being a jerk. Just have him steal the automaton for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Him don't care because the girl I'm dreams disappear.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
maybe,
that's a good...
Hey, I have time. In the summer. Can make a Damien's cut of this movie. Would there be a way to get... Yeah, because the heist just... Right, just have him... do the last auction, everybody claps, and then I have like a black screen, girl goes missing, and it's just him being crazy. Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect.
This week in questions, I asked.
Come back to questions. Why do we keep talking to the internet? How have we learned?
Because the internet is our friend. It tells us nice things.
I'm not so sure about that. I watch feedback, y'all. And that is a lie.
I went to the internet and I was asking them about films which pair together within a year.
Mm-hmm.
Movie, and I use the example of Lighthouse Down and Olympus mm-hmm. Has Fallen to be like, sometimes every time within a year... Oh. People just randomly decide they're going to make the same movie.
Right, Harry Potter 6 and 7.
Damon is now dead. What you're hearing now is his final sounds. Why they sound like laughter, I can't quite explain it to you. I think it's just something that broke
that's
in
how
his
I'm
DNA.
That's how I'm planning to die.
Laughing.
<It's>
happy. And the internet responded. Jess from Real Insight mentioned Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Of course.
The favored.
Deep Impact being the better of the two.
Right.
Forgotten gem.
At Film Nerd Jamie brought up not just Armageddon and Deep Impact, but also A Bug's Life and Ants.
Right.
You guys remember that year?
Right. Ants being the better of the two. Another forgotten gem. These Pixar people just stealing... Ants Thunder.
Horribly.
Terrible.
Simon Collum from Screen Insight brought up the double feature that I don't think I would have ever thought of, which is the Abraham Lincoln double feature of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and Lincoln in 2020.
Alright. Fine. I'll give it. I still haven't seen that Vampire Hunter.
I saw it.
I did not watch it.
I hear that it is
horrendous.
On fire. How bad it is.
Bad.
Oh my word.
a little bit racist too.
Well, it was a different time.
Mm.
Racism was accepted.
Not by Abraham Lincoln standards.
Ask Quentin Tarantino.
Ryan McNeil from the Matinee mentions what he likes to call the man double feature, saying a single man and a serious man.
Nope! We're sorry. The number you have dialed is incorrect. Please try the number again. This is a recording from That Is Wrong.
I'm not sure if that's really just him or if that's essentially feedback from our podcast because he listens to us so much. That's wow.
I'm going to clap him though, because that is incredible. That's good work.
Shane from Film Actually brought up a double feature which I remember noticing that year, and at the time I was between the two films. I couldn't pick one, but now I know which one to pick as my favourite. Mm-hmm. I think it's 2008 when released was The Prestige and The Illusionist.
Yeah. One is a Chris Nolan movie and one is not.
I really liked The Illusionist at the time.
No, you don't.
I did.
No, you
did. I haven't seen it again for
is
so long.
Is it damn right? You have
Prestige, I've seen like a billion times.
Yeah, once or twice.
But the winner
of
this, I have to say,
still reigning champ,
is something which is an obvious double feature, but for some reason I don't remember people connecting the movies at the time in the conversation. And it's being from 2012, the, as he titles it, international politics double feature of Argo Fuck Yourself and Zero Dark Thirty.
That's not the same movie. That is no... Nope.
You're not allowing it?
I'm sorry.
I'm with it. I think that's kind of good.
Those movies have, like, an enormous gap. Like, they're about... Like, tangentially... If that about the same, they're about different countries. That's about as close as they come. They're nothing like each other. What?
They're both CIA movies.
Oh, all right then, fine. Sorry. No, you're right.
About
then, 2012 was a CIA movie
yes,
as well.
It was. Mm-hmm. So you think I'm going to avoid you and argue? No.
You're these people are mad people. I do not accept it.
You do not accept
it. So I think the winner is Ryan. From
with the man double feature.
Yeah, the man double feature.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
He's wrong, but he's so right.
This week gone by, the Sundance Film Festival ended. And...
Yay!
Yes, all the
wonderful. Did you see all the movies? No?
I didn't get to go to
the
festival.
Didn't go?
We didn't go. When are we going to go to the Sundance Festival?
It's in Utah, so never.
But they have movies there.
Yes. Yes, they do. Other places have movies that aren't Utah.
Okay.
Alright, let me put it this way. Once the movies end, do you know what there is to do in Utah? Neither do people in Utah. Right? You know it's a good idea. You know it's a fun thing to do in Utah. Pack your shit and leave. It's the funnest thing anyone can do. And I say that knowing people who live there. Place sucks. It does.
Wait, remind me.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the place of your story of the one time you went to the States?
Nope.
No. Okay. I remember there was a story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It'll never be talked about again.
And with the festival over, there are a lot of films being bought, being distributed over the year and to the future that people are looking forward. And I'm curious, what's the one movie that played at Sundance that you're most anticipated for
Blue
in the future?
Wetlands!
Actually, two people.
Yeah, I actually don't know what movies played at Sundance except for Blue Ruin. So
I know Wetlands played. I would like
and
to
I
watch
love
it.
Blue Ruin.
I want to see Frank too.
Fair enough.
Why don't I try to forget? It must have been that something lovers call fate kept me saying I had to wait. I saw them all just couldn't fall till we met. It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and I find...
Andy, now don't panic, please.
Don't panic. I told you it's a mistake to ever bring a live thing in the house.
Stop it. Don't do that. Go to that one. There.
You know, maybe we should just call the police. Dial 911. It's the lobster squad.
Come on, Albie. They're only baby ones, for God's sake.
If they're only babies, then you pick them up.
Oh, all right. All right. All right. Here. Here you go.
Oh, don't give it to me. Don't. Look. One crawl behind the refrigerator. It'll turn up in our bed at night. Will you get out of here with that thing? Jesus.
Get it.
Talk to him. You speak shellfish. Hey. Look, put it in the pot.
I can't put it in the pot. I can't put a live thing in hot water.
What do you think we're going to do? Take it to the movies?
Here you go. Oh, good, Abby. Oh, thank
you. So our top five this week, which Doug has selected to go with his unspoilery version of of the best offer.
Top five Raid 2 trailers.
Sadly, no. Yes. It was our top five quirky film. Quirky romances, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, Douglas, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. my number five.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Starting off poorly already.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm. My number five.
I have 9 films. Let's see how many you can scratch off.
It's Lars von Trier's Breaking the Wheel. Because, see, you guys...
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, this conversation is over.
So... quirky love stories. You guys saw quirky as a good thing,
mm-hmm.
right? You guys saw quirky as you know, Zoe,
the adorable thing in the movie.
Exactly,
that makes you like it
exactly.
More.
Zoe Deschanel and 50 Years of Some Days of Summer and all that shit. No, I definitely wanted to kind of keep a close relationship to this movie and the way these quirks were portrayed, even though they weren't Lars von Trier-esque. Quirks. They were still a little bit more than, you know, a weird girl who sings country a lot.
An unpredictable or unaccountable actor event. Fair enough.
So, Breaking the Waves, which is fantastic if you can soldier through all of the movie.
You're a bad person.
Is my number five.
The movie is fantastic. Oh, wow, you took this list to somewhere new.
Yes, I did.
Okay, so my number five out of this list is the gem, the best movie of the Soko. And this is Lost in Translation.
That makes sense.
Right.
You have best out of notebooks.
Because when you talk about a film where Scarlett Johansson as a lost soul in Japan manages to saunter off with Bill Murray, I'm going to call it Bill Murray. I know he's not really playing Bill Murray, but he's supposed to be Bill Murray in my mind. Just having these weird adventures and going off. I think the one point which kind of cues me into this movie is there's one day where she was just kind of on her own after being with Bill Murray, and afterwards she's like kind of pouting and sulking and being horrible, and Bill Murray just looks at her and says, didn't you have anyone to make you feel better? Like, do you have to play like a little asshole that I wasn't there for 2 hours? Calm down. This movie is fantastic, and I adore the way it makes not just me happy, but Damien sad as he is shaking his head at me violently. You're going to have to get over the fact that I enjoy Soko.
No. Listen, you liking Soko is not... Like, the reason I behave this way, though, is because there are movies that I can accept that I don't like, but other people like. Then there are movies...
Can you name some of them so I keep in that box?
Then there are... Like War Horse. Right? I just like making fun of War Horse. I don't have a problem with that movie. Mm-hmm. It's kind of dumb. It's not his best work, but fine, people can like that. Sofia Coppola, though. I don't like any of her movies, so this comes as no surprise, but this one is the one that people hold up and they're
Damien. It's Annie Hall.
It is Annie. Yeah, it is little. It is Annie Hall. They're like, Damien. I was like, what the fuck are you people talking about?
I don't get it.
Lost in translation.
The problem with me is I want to see what others see in the movie. I want there to be a thing that I go, oh, I guess if I'd seen that before, then maybe. Or something, I go, well, I guess if you... But it's not there. I don't think it ever will be. But my number 5 is more in the Douglas vein than in your stupid freaking vein. Let the right one in.
Wow.
Now, this movie is a timeless classic, a real treasure that will live on forever.
That was my number one movie of that year.
Yes, it was, because it is incredible. Unlike certain other movies. I was sad when they remade it. I was sad when the remake was... Wait, like, I gave it a pass when it came out because I was being generous. It's not anywhere near. It's not even close to kind of thought of good.
And I kind of liked it, but I knew it was lesser.
It is so much lesser, it is kind of sad. It depresses me how not close to... Like, they got the story kind of close, but they got none of the feel. They had none of the acting. And they got nothing that made me just... It was just unnerving watching Let the Right One In. The entire time you knew... Very bad things are about to happen in this movie. And they just kept stringing it along. And you just watch and you just... This movie. The entire time you just kept saying to yourself, this movie is incredible. This movie is incredible. And then the book end the movie and it is perfect. And you go, holy shit. And then America took it and went, we can paint something kind of like it, I guess. But Let the Right One In. The real one. Let's not be crazy. It's a romance between two young children. And it's really good. It shouldn't be. It is really good. I love it. This is definitely one of those desert island movies. I'd take this with me. I'd take this movie. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
My number 4 is... One Ruby Sparks.
Oh, now you guys remember that movie. No one remembered it for their top 10s, though. Just on an island by itself. How many times have you rewatched it since?
I love this movie.
Never?
I love Never. This movie.
Zero times plus zero times.
This is one of those.
One. I have seen that movie more than you guys have.
I'm just going to
talk. That's the funny part about it. I've seen it more than the two guys that love it. Oh, it's so good. It's the best movie ever. It's not on my top 10 though. I didn't. Oh shit, I didn't remember it. I wonder why. Because it sucks balls. Oh no.
I think this is what they really meant to send for every movie we think.
Probably.
Because they're quirky movies.
Yes, they are. So, Ruby Sparks...
Oh, yeah, that's why I never like
Ruby Sparks.
Ruby
Sparks is great. So,
how many times have you rewatched it again?
Anyway, I've watched it a couple of times.
Yeah,
actually.
Man. Yeah, zero times. zero more times.
So, actually, I think all of my movies tie in some way to...
Awesome.
Tie in some way...
Oh, no, it's in
back to this movie. For instance, in Breaking the Waves,
mm-hmm.
like, God steals a person.
Right.
So it's a love story plus somebody steals something. Right?
And in Ruby Sparks, someone creates a person.
Yes, he does. But he also steals her memories.
Oh, so you're a bad person. Oh, good.
Well, he also steals her what's the word? Her free will.
That movie could have been so great.
That movie was great.
They just did what I wanted.
And it gave
just,
me
just,
it
just
gave
because
me something
you were wanted to
God damn
it. It gave me
been
something
the best
that
horror
want,
movie of all time.
So it gave me something that I wanted, but generally don't get, which is a good Paul Dano movie. I really want to like Paul Dano movies, But there are not very many of them.
What about Lupo? That elephant movie?
Lupo, 12 uh-huh. Years a Slave, uh-huh. Ruby Sparks,
uh-huh. And Drink Your Milkshake.
Okay, now let's look at those four movies. Lupo, Paul Dano is in there for five
seconds. Right.
12 Years a Slave, Paul Dano is in there for 5 seconds.
Right. He's most effective as a sprinkling.
Yeah.
Prisoners.
Yeah. Well, I haven't watched that movie, but
alright, he's in that for like half.
Uh-huh. No, but I'm not saying that they don't exist. No. I'm saying that considering how many movies he is in,
and how much you like him,
yeah, it doesn't. The relationship does not justify itself.
Let's not ask for too much yet, sir. There are certain people who we do this to, and the moment we open that floodgates,
bad things happen.
It becomes bad. Let's be happy with him in his position.
Yep.
Right. Everyone needs a support.
Yeah.
But anyways, my number four. Having to call it an audible because that movie was my number one. So everything is shifted up. Number four is being called up. I am going to go right ahead and I'm going to take the 2007 film Lars and the Real Girl. Because when Ryan Gosling decides that he needs to have a girlfriend and it ends up being a sex doll that he ordered online, and an entire town agrees to be okay with this. It makes one of the most adorable, most lovable, most weird movies you might have ever
seen. There's times when movies are real good.
You have to think about this, Douglas.
Like, wait, you haven't seen it?
No.
The whole town enables him.
I keep watching it in fits and starts. I've only seen maybe 15 minutes of the
it's
movie.
Really good.
Holy I imagine shit. So. I love Ryan Gosling.
Holy
you
shit.
Know?
I didn't even know who he was when I saw that.
Yeah, that's Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. And...
But Douglas, the town agrees to it.
Yeah, it's my...
I didn't even know that. I thought it was just a brother and...
No. There are a few of them which make jokes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right? But overall, the town has agreed to be okay with this. And they talk to it as if it's a real person.
And the one
right?
that... In fact, the ones who make jokes are alienated by the rest of the townsfolk. Like, they are 100% behind this. And the whole time you watch it, you're like... You're waiting for the movie logic to break... Doesn't incredible?
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I like that movie a lot. Should I think thought about that? All right. I'm just going to go with the worst thing in the world, and so then the rest of my movie can be shiny, happy, niceness. Old boy. It's one hell of a relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk about unexpected.
I'm not even going to let him go with that. So, my number three is The Science of Sleep.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So, clearly, I'm just going from number one to number two.
Oh, no.
I'm just going down the list.
That was supposed to be number four. It was shifted up.
So, The Science of Sleep is fantastic.
Nice.
It's from one of my favorite directors, even though he... has underperformed recently.
That I should have had like 20 audibles for.
Yep. But you didn't.
Of
and now
not.
You're boned.
And in this movie, you've got one hell of a quirky love story where this guy, Gael Garcia Bernal, has his awake and his sleep and his sanity stolen from him. So, yes.
See, this is a movie that I don't like, but I don't mind that people don't like.
You see, I'm really worried about like my not top two at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because
there's no chance they're staying under.
But
so
I will not break. I will not steal. They must come up organically.
Okay.
And an audible for my number three now is a 2012 classic.
Mm-hmm.
Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because
when
a man tells you that he's a time traveler and he needs someone to assist him on his journey... You're almost perfectly sure that this is going to be a movie about a crazy person.
Of course.
But it slowly but surely takes you into this world where you're happy that he is a crazy person.
Yeah, he's...
And then when the end of... I almost don't want the end of that movie to be what it was and leave it as crazy people. Because that movie is kind of spectacular as it is. And I like movies where Aubrey Plaza is a lead, even though that one last year... Never mind. I like 50% of the movies where Aubrey Plaza is the lead.
The two duelists was incredible. Silver Linings Playbook. Guys, I don't know what Quirky is.
That's also, he now only has one movie left.
Yeah, it's like a half a pick.
And guess what? My number two is Punch Drunk Love. Andrew?
Yes, I knew it.
Starring one Adam. Oh,
as you guys have talked to him, four of the movies.
I'm probably going to take one more. Looking at my list right now, I think you're boned.
So Punch Drunk Love is fantastic. And this one is probably the closest similarity, because not only is it a quirky love story, but money is stolen from this person by Philip Seymour Hoffman. And it's just great.
Shut up!
Winslet couldn't get me to love that movie.
Winslet wasn't in that movie.
Who was the kid?
Emma, the same Watson. Girl from Breaking the Waves. Emma Thompson, I think, is her name.
I'm thinking
Emily Watson.
I think I'm thinking about the wrong movie.
Yeah, you are.
Punch Drunk Love is amazing.
It is fantastic.
That's the one with Adam Sandler.
Yes.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
No, I'm thinking about...
I know what you're thinking of.
Yes, the one with Jim Carrey and her friends.
Yeah.
The movie I'm mixing it up with.
So,
my audible number two. Once again, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to grab it. Hopefully, I don't give a shit at this point. It's Zach Braff's debut film, Garden State.
I love that movie. I love it.
I really like that movie. Yeah, I think the one scene which always comes back to me is the moment where Natalie Portman is talking about having a unique moment, right? It's like people like to talk about when they first met and they're talking about music, like he's listening to the Shins on his headphones.
And she shares it with him.
Okay, yeah. And it's just this moment where you kind of share music and becomes this thing where you're like, yeah, I like moments like that and I want moments like that in my life. But it's the unique moment which kind of touches me, where she's like, do something, when you feel that you're doing something kind of generic and kind of weird and kind of like, You think everyone's had this experience in your life and you start to feel kind of lost, do something really crazy and unique to kind of get that back. And you're like, this is a really interestingly crazy woman.
That's how crazy people think. We in reality, no, you cannot do that. Because you're not a crazy person. My turn. Moonrise Kingdom. Next.
Awesome. Oh, wow. Okay.
That's interesting. I didn't pick a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
Why did Wes Anderson not
I thought about it while we were here, and I'm like, I wonder how come there are no Wes Anderson movies yet. And I'm going to continue the trend because my number one is not. My number one, actually, there is a reason why I was trying to shut you up very quickly, because my number one is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I forgot as much.
Directed by one Michel Gondry. So he actually gets two out of my five. And again, this is this crazy sort of quirky love story that really isn't a love story, but is at its heart. And, you know, both people get memories stolen from them. So all of my movies have love and stealing. Love thievery.
So my number one, having 10 of my movies taken from me.
Well, that's your fault.
Is
being too obvious.
Wow. It's a film that I fell in love with a long time ago, and I've always loved
500 Days Ago?
No.
Okay.
And it's As Good As It Gets. The film with Jack Nicholson.
Oh, this is okay. Oh, yeah.
How is that quirky though?
Because it's a love story between Jack Nicholson and a dog.
Fair enough.
When you talk about a man who's suffering from OCD and what's that word? Germ phobia.
I was just joking.
Yeah, I know. I'm ignoring you. I'm just continuing.
Okay.
Right?
For a second, I never thought you thought it was serious.
No. Okay. I think it's kind of weird, as I have this memory of the first time I watched this movie, which was when my grandmother brought this movie to the house. She rented it from one of the many rental stores that used to be in existence, with a cassette. and she popped it in, and of course on the cassette it said, this is not for copy, this is distributed by the person. And you're like, okay, so this person bootlegged it in the store.
Well, the funny thing is, because when we were younger, right, there were rental places, but we never went to them. And even they apparently had these kind of videos. But anytime we got a video, I remember we went to C-Mart, which was really a bookstore, and they sold these videos on cassettes. Clearly somebody taped them, but we didn't think about that.
Because we were young and
exactly. Gone. So I got I put them in the VCR, and I didn't think that there was anything wrong with the movies when I saw those scrolls. I was always just like, I wonder why they put that there. I wonder who's on the other side of the line when you call that number. like that's the kind of thing that I would think.
I bought Space Jam.
Yes, Space
and
Jam.
And Jurassic Park on cassette from C-Mart. That's kind of crazy.
Lucky I never owned a cassette in my life.
Thank you. But we also had RoboCop on cassette.
Yes,
so
we did.
Yeah, that's that. But yeah, As Good As It Gets, I adore this movie. It's kind of amazing at that point when you reach towards the end, when like one of his things is that he can't stand on like a brick in the ground. If like it's a tile ground and you have the grout where it would be a brick, he can't stand on it. He has to stand on a tile, and he accidentally does it. Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect movie, that perfect version of the movie that I wanted from The Best Offer, where you guys were talking about the person evolving due to this relationship. This movie is that, where Jack Nicholson, as little as he does, he evolves a little bit because he's been able to get closer to this woman who, when we start out, is just a waitress who, for some unknown reason, became his waitress. Like, literally, you're pretty sure the only way that happened was he walked into the restaurant one day and she was the first one to get to him, and he's like, you're the one for now. Forever. And the amount of crazy shit he pulls in this movie, from showing up at this woman's house because she's not at work one morning, to telling this woman that her son is going to die. You're like, Jack Nicholson, you're great. I love this movie.
Yeah, but I still think this movie is really about him and the dog.
The dog is a big part.
No, it's this. That's,
and there's Greg
there
Kinnear
no,
as well.
No, forget Greg Kinnear. Forget Helen Hunt. It's Jack Nicholson
and
the puppy
and
dog.
And pre-radio Cuba Gooding Jr.
I know, right? Back when people thought he was good. Oh, how we have discovered what really was happening there.
No, I think more than that, which I don't want to say is actually a truth or a false. I think what happened is equivalent to what I always say happens when things like this happen, like when Tevez was unable to play football for like a year because he said something bad to the manager. I think he screwed the wrong woman one night. Has been exiled to straight to DVD.
I think it's a story of Ben Affleck before Affleck took the turn. Mm-hmm. I think he just decided, okay, I've done a few things that people think are good. I deserve a certain caliber of paycheck, and I will just follow the money. And it didn't work well.
There are ways not to go to straight to DVD.
I know. Well, that's true. But
But it gets to a point where no big studio will work with you,
is why I say
no. Because you've been in so much shit, you are going to drag down. No one will trust you to be anywhere near any of their project. So the only way you're going to be able to act is if
straight to DVD.
Yeah. Okay. No one wants you in their TV show. Because you're not that great an actor. No one wants you in their movie because he can't sell to anybody. He's not Denzel. He's not Will Smith.
Yet Kevin Hart is still a thing.
Yeah, because he's funny. Listen. Even though his movies are terrible, like across the board, his stand-up sell out, and they sell out for a reason. Because he's funny.
No.
I tried to watch his stand-up, Let Me Explain.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave the... I don't know if... I didn't know this was still a thing. I thought this was only the 90s stand-up did this. Where they would do a recorded intro, basically. Where they would do basically a sketch.
Right.
To say, okay, this is why we're doing a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I gave that a pass. Right? Yeah. I just kind of went, alright, I'm past this. Let's move on. Around 8 minutes into the actual stand-up, like, I can't.
I'm out. Yo, guys, peace. You guys don't know what funny is. I know that from a long time, so...
That's fine.
All right. No, I have no idea what quirk is. couldn't bother.
No,
so
that man is not your number
one.
So
I just picked... What? Idiot. I just picked my favorite love story gone wrong for the last couple of years. Blue Valentine. That's
been
a hot That's a love story.
No, there's no quirk there, though.
What, he likes her? That's the quirk?
No, he loves her. And she wants nothing to do with him anymore. That's incredible.
Is there a quirk to that?
I don't know.
I'm trying to...
I said I don't know.
You see, and the thing is, I'm trying to figure out if I pulled as much a travesty as you just did when I spoke Lars von Trier's name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I did, though. I think that
scoots
by. Scrapes by.
I like Blue Valentine.
Yeah, Blue Valentine is awesome.
So it's on the list.
Okay.
It's
very simple.
The logic here is clear.
Guys looking at me like I'm not talking perfect sense here.
Guess what, guys?
Your list sucks. No, alright. Now for my list. Top 5 Raid 2 trailers.
And that will be the
in
end.
In order.
That will be the end of the movie.
The list.
In the end of the Unnamed Movie Podcast. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening. You can hear us always through iTunes, Stitcher, and over at gmanreviews.com. I'm Andrew over at gmanreviews on Twitter, as well as everywhere else. Instagram and such. I don't know why anyone follow me on Instagram. Douglas.
Do you even own that camera?
Come on.
Come on.
I am on Twitter as well. My name is DJ. I lost his name. Mm-hmm. I have my website that I'm doing, which is very much unlike this one. It's decaffeinationreport.com.
Yep.
More money stuff. More stupid stuff.
Do you like stocks?
Yeah.
No?
And what's funny
is
so far I haven't actually spoken about any stocks. It's just foolishness.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that goes.
Like our website.
Yeah.
Just throw garbage on the website.
And Damien, are you anywhere?
Sadly, someone signed me up to Twitter.
And 2 years, he's still there.
I hate it so much.
Why haven't you closed the account?
I don't know how. I didn't even look at it. And I was like, alright, I guess I have it now. Let's see. But I don't like it. In fact, every time it sends some tweet, I go, why would anyone think this is interesting? And they keep coming. It's time and time again. Some dude put a picture of his food. And if the technology were there, I'd reach through the phone and stab you in the neck. But sadly, that technology doesn't exist. What's that Jamie Foxx, Gerard Butler movie?
Law Abiding.
Right. I want that technology with the exploding phone.
Yes.